This is the No More Wasted Days podcast, and we're your hosts, Sarah Kaufman Bradstreet
and Heather Peachy. Grab your favorite NA drink and listen as we share vulnerable stories so you never feel alone on your alcohol-free journey.
And gain insights from us as we break down our most used tips and strategies that have kept us alcohol-free.
It's time to break free from wasting any more of your days to the drinking, blackout, hangover cycle.
Welcome back to another episode of the No More Wasted Days podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sarah.
And I'm Heather.
And we are back this week to continue our conversation about grief. Last week, we talked all about how grief feels in our body, what it actually does in our brain, and how we can get through it without alcohol. And this week, we're going to take it to a different level and talk about grieving our drinking selves, which is something that I didn't even know would happen. And then all of a sudden it did. But before we dive too far into this topic, I want to remind you that the Daymakers community is available for to support you on your alcohol-free journey. If you need a community of like-minded people, check it out in the show notes of this episode. We offer weekly group coaching calls. There's about 6 to 8 each month, and they're led by Heather and me. And we also have a private message thread community that is off of social media. So that's like 24/7 support to you on your alcohol-free journey. When you have a craving, you can get inside the group, say, hey, someone help me out, and someone is there. So if you're curious about doing that, check out the show notes.
Yeah, please do. Come on, y'all.
Come on, y'all. I love it when Heather says that, you guys. I tried to do it on the episode with just me and Ryan, and I did not do y'all justice. So,
well,
I'm not a natural. I didn't grow up this way.
I did. 44 years of it.
I love it. I feel like people say it a lot, too. I could just listen to Heather all day.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because she's just got a nice, soothing voice.
Thank you. Speaking of listening, make sure that you go back and listen to part one of our little grief series. I think you will find it helpful.
I think so, too. And I'll be sure to put it in the show notes. So if you do it backwards and you listen to this one first, that's okay. But then go back and listen to the one before so you can get through all of this and really have that knowledge base in your brain. So grieving your drinking self is kind of a concept that I had no idea would come my way. I had listened to Quitlet. I had listened to people talk about so much of quitting drinking, and nobody really talked about this idea of having to let go of this past version of yourself finally. And I found myself doing this at about 6 months. All of a sudden, I was kind of angry. I was kind of like, oh my gosh, I don't ever get to go back to my drinking self, because I had made the decision for myself at that point that alcohol was a non-negotiable for me, that I would not be drinking it anymore. It was not going to serve my life in any way. And I was starting to clearly see that I did have a problem with it, that I was not a person who could have just one, like so many friendly trolls like to tell me to do on social media. That wasn't going to work for me. And also, I didn't want to make it work for me. I was kind of like, I don't want to have just one glass of poison. I don't want to just have one and do that disservice to myself. But I was still angry and kind of sad. Like, I was kind of sad that I wouldn't be able to ever be that fun drunk Sarah again. And
yeah,
it was a little bit of a slap in the face, because before then I had been riding the pink cloud, just like, oh, I love being alcohol free. This is the best thing ever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, no fair. When did you notice yours?
Well, 6 months after I quit drinking, I had just had a double mastectomy and a total hysterectomy. So in terms of grief, I had so much grieving going on. You know, I'd got diagnosed with cancer, 100 days alcohol-free.
Wow.
So I remember experiencing some grief around that, but I was grieving everything, basically.
Yeah.
I did notice more so like around Christmas of last year.
And that was how far into your journey last year's Christmas?
It was like right before 1,000 days. So over 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. And just missing that drinking self.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because I miss my drinking self at different times and it still pops up. Mm-hmm. I'm a lot better at managing it now. at that 6 month mark, I was just so angry about, like, it's kind of like, I find it interesting. I know I've said that a few times, but a lot of people talk about this, that you have this almost anger that, okay, you're really excited about being alcohol free. You know, it's the best choice for you, but why couldn't I be one of the people that could have just one?
Mm-hmm.
It felt so unfair to me. And I would look at my sister who, you know, has the similar DNA. She can have just one. Why can't I? Why do I have to take everything too far? That was very much my thought.
Yeah. I think around Christmas, you know, if you think about it, there's a lot of stressors around the holidays
mm-hmm.
and a lot of peopling. And
yes.
I think people grieve us quitting drinking as well because we are different in some mm-hmm. ways. So I think that was part of the feelings around Christmas for me.
That is a huge takeaway that I think I've tried to ignore, that people have had to grieve the drinking side of me as well. Almost like, well, who cares? It's harder for me, right? But it is hard for some people, especially, like, I do have friends, I do have family members that were my drinking buddies. And now mm-hmm. I'm like, sorry, I'm just a sober girl over here, living my best life and loving it. But yeah, I'm definitely different. I'm definitely more chill on holidays. I'm more, my introverted self shows up more, and it, like mm-hmm. the way to get my extrovert out was with alcohol. So
yeah,
I know that it's different. I also know that I show up in a more calm state for my family, for my
yeah.
kids. So I have to remind myself of those things. And I was actually talking to Ryan about that just yesterday, I think, even with quitting smoking pot, that I have the same thing. Like the sun comes out and I go, ugh, I could really go for gardening and smoking a big old fatty bowl and just like doing it up. But I also know it doesn't serve me. It wasn't doing what I needed it to do anymore. It wasn't allowing me to live my best version of myself. And while there might have been fun moments to it, there was also in the evening when I needed to get, you know, dinner ready, when I needed to be present, I couldn't be. Like there was still a fog. And that's how alcohol was too. And it's just hard. So if you miss your drinking self, you're totally not alone. And we're actually going to go through the 5 stages of grief as they pertain to your drinking self. Last week, we talked about the 5 stages of grief and how they may pertain to you if you are very sick or if you have a loved one who has passed away. So I hope you guys find this topic really interesting. I know it's something that even when I was going through the notes, I was like, oh yeah. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the first one, I wonder if I put these in the same order as you did on the other ones.
I think you did.
Oh my gosh, look at that. All right, so the first one is denial. And for me, and I'm going to let Heather chime in too on what these looked like for her. For me, this was still when I was drinking, saying, I don't have a problem. Like I would just look at my drinking and go, it's not that big of a deal. I haven't gotten a DUI. I haven't lost my job. I haven't ruined my marriage. I don't have a problem. And I was stuck in this stage for a long, long time. Was that
Me
the
too.
Case for you?
Absolutely. As I said in last week's episode, I have a propensity for denial.
Me too.
In a lot of areas of my life, and particularly when I was a drinker, I was in major denial. And I heard once that denial is more powerful than norepinephrine in your brain.
Whoa, that is wild.
Mm-hmm.
That is a cool fact to have locked in there so you can be
yeah.
aware. I think another way denial shows up when we're quitting drinking and grieving our drinking self is that little voice, that little drinking voice that likes to talk to you and say, look at you. You quit for 2 weeks. You can totally go back to drinking now because you've proven that you don't have a problem. A person with a problem couldn't quit for 2 weeks. This voice was loud in the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Still gets noisy in there about that for me.
Still talking to me every now and then.
Yeah, going, it's rare, but it happens.
Yeah. Now when it says it, I'm just like, I'm not even listening to you. Like,
right.
No. Like, I'm almost like, why are you still here? But it is there. And I had to really stay focused on why I was doing this. In the beginning, I was starting with 30 days, to prove that I didn't have a problem. So when my voice was talking to me at just 2 weeks saying, look, you did 2 weeks. You don't have a problem. You have all this alcohol in your house. You're not even drinking it. You're a rock star. Like, just go ahead and start moderating. And I was like, no, I have to go for 30 days. This is my deal I've made for myself. I have to keep working on myself, doing my journaling, doing my things. So I just had to shut that voice down. And that's my biggest recommendation for you guys. When that voice is popping up, shut it down. However you can talk to it to make it stop. What do you do to make that voice, that almost that voice of denial?
Yeah, I do like a lot of thought work and thought replacement with myself and with my clients. So I just replace the thought with, you don't drink, or stop it. What the heck are you thinking type of things. And I like to visualize. So I'll put things in a container.
Yep.
So
I love to put things in a container. I got to remember that one, because whenever you mention it, I'm like, oh, that's so smart. I've said on a TikTok before that I tell that voice it's drunk. Like, go home. You're drunk. I'm not going to listen to you, because it is. It is my drunk voice. So instead of getting in a bargaining situation with it, which is what we're going to talk about next, when that voice is coming in, trying to deny the facts that I know are true, I have ways that I talk to it. So practice with that. And it's definitely something, if you guys want us to talk more about that voice, we can do some more research on it. But we're actually going to dive in now to the second stage of grief, which is bargaining. And I have to say, and I know Heather already said this, none of these come in a perfect order. So right. Don't be like, all right, I'm on denial right now. I'm going to wait for bargaining. No, they're going to come at all different times. It's going to just, it's a crazy thing. So bargaining for me, I feel like that's when I was in the take a break stage. Like, okay, I'm going to just take a break. I'm going to do this for 30 days. I'm going to do this now for 60 days. Now I'm going to go, like, I'm going to go for just a while longer. And I feel like I lived there for about 4 months before I finally committed to, okay, I can tell myself that I'm doing this a little bit longer now. I just wasn't committing to forever. I would just go one more day, one more week, one more month. And I was in that stage for a while of bargaining in the beginning of my journey. And I talk to people who are even years into their journey, and they're like, I'm still just taking a break. So do you feel like that lie that's in line with bargaining?
I do. Where I did the most bargaining is when I was actually a drinker. And I would be like, okay, I'm only going to drink wine.
And that was a big one for me.
I'm only going to drink at certain times of the day. So I think that's where my bargaining showed up. Mm-hmm. And once I decided to quit, I struggled a little bit with the word never drinking again, but not as much as some people do. You know, we're all different.
Definitely. And that's the thing too. Don't listen to this and go, well, I didn't feel that way. Well, that's okay. You can be totally different than us. And that's what I think is pretty cool, because we can all hear from other people and take what we can from them. I definitely did the bargaining as a drinker. Like, I was stuck in that stage as long as I was stuck in denial as a drinker. You guys, I was stuck in denial for like the first 2 years of being alcohol free, being like, I quit drinking, but I never had a drinking problem. And then all of a sudden I was like, girl, you had a little drinking problem. It's like all of a sudden my ego shut up enough for me to hear, oh, okay, yeah. No, I don't think I was normal. But oh my gosh, the bargaining with myself. I'll get 2 days where I can drink. These are the 2 days. This is how much I will drink on those days. And I never stuck to it either, because we've learned that when you're drinking, your brain stops being able to rationalize. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I'll never drink on a Sunday or Monday. I'll drink one drink and then I'll have water in between. That was one I always said I was going to do. Never did that either.
Yeah.
That was in hopes of not having a hangover. But bargaining or making deals is just easier than saying goodbye. But it just has a cost, because the more you're bargaining, you're just kind of killing your self-esteem, because you're making these deals with yourself and you're breaking them.
Yeah.
Because you're just stuck in that addiction cycle.
I want to say something about bargaining that just popped into my brain. One of the members of the Daymakers community talks about this a lot, which I've had this a lot on my mind. The bargaining, or the decision to stop doing something, can be harder than actually doing it.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting, because that member has said that since has been a member of the Daymakers community before it was even called the Daymakers community. Mm-hmm. And she would say it. And I was in the beginning like, I don't quite get that. Now, as you get farther along, you hear things finally the right way. Like it finally clicks in your brain.
Yeah.
And it's so true. The hardest part is just deciding that you're going to make this choice and you're going to stick to it. And then you do it. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to shut down that bargaining almost and just be like, nope. It's like when my kids ask me for something, hey, mom, can I have screen time? And the policy is not right at that moment. So I've said no. And then they try to bargain with me. And I say, you asked your question. I gave you my answer. We're done. And that's a way you can talk to your drinking brain. Like if you have a cut and dry, I used that a lot when I was a teacher with students, just like shut down the bargaining. So do that with your own brain. It really does work. The next stage is depression. And this is the part that kind of surprised me the most because I was feeling so great on my alcohol-free journey. Still do. Like I still love being alcohol-free. I think I always will. My skin was brighter. Belly bloat was going away. I had a lot of energy. And then all of a sudden, I'd be sad. And I had to sit with those feelings and I wasn't used to it. And it wasn't, sometimes it was about not being able to drink, but sometimes it was because I really missed the buzz. I missed getting to check out. I missed numbing out. I missed slurring my speech, as ridiculous as it sounds. Like I missed getting slur speech drunk. And I still do. I'm going to be 100% honest with you guys. I still miss that sometimes. I don't really know what it feels like anymore.
Yeah.
But when I see it on movies, I'm like, oh, I kind of missed that. And then I have to be like, well, you did it. Were you sad at any point?
I remember taking a dip right before, mentally, right before my 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I was also still on chemo for breast cancer. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And, you know, the chart, my handy chart that we talked about on another episode. It's normal to see a dip right before 365 days. Mm-hmm. And I shared that with another Daymaker member, and we both felt the same way. So I think there's something to that. But I don't remember being depressed about quitting drinking, per se. Mm-hmm. I know that I have missed parts of my drinking self, and kind of how I came to acceptance of that is like telling myself that not everything about my alcohol use was bad, and some good things came out of it. So
I think that that's huge right there. And I think a lot of sober content, well, not really. A lot of sober content creators are going to tell you more about all of the good stuff because it's hard to see that good stuff when you're stuck in the cycle. But all of us will also talk every now and then about that we miss it. Like, it's okay to miss it. So if you are feeling that, that's okay. That's normal. And it's not that I look at every picture of myself where I know I was drunk and go, oh, that was crazy. There's some where I look at it and I go, oh my gosh, that night was so fun. But it's just where we are on our journey. And if you're ever going, oh, I kind of missed this part of it, that's okay. I really have to walk myself through the full cycle when I do that and kind of go, well, yeah, that part was fun, but now let's step forward to when you entered the blackout stage and then enter the stage where you woke up in the morning and you couldn't remember and your husband's filling you in on what you said. That part wasn't so fun. And then my brain goes, oh, okay, I guess there's not too much reason to be sad about it. The next stage is anger. And this one surprised me again, because I'm not an angry person, or at least I thought when I was a drinker. I think drinking made me that a toxic optimist, as people say. Like, now I'm more of a realist, darn it. But no, I got angry when I realized I will never be a normal drinker. I take everything to the extreme. And I would look at things like, why was my dad able to have one beer every night, but I can't? Why could he have just one? But I can't figure that out. I was so angry about that when I figured it out. And I figured out this one when I was listening to a Mel Robbins podcast, I think, maybe book. It was an Audible special that she had. But she was talking to somebody who had gone through rehab, and she was kind of, you know, doing the dig deeper like they always do. And he finally said, I'm angry. I'm angry that I can't just do this every once in a while. And it like clicked. I was like, yeah. I was like, me too. Had you had that part of your, was that part of your journey?
Oh, yeah. Like I said in last week's episode, denial and anger are usually my go-tos in most things in life. However, that is improving with EMDR, but that's not why we're here. I was mad more at myself and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I was mad at alcohol for so many things. And the number one thing I was so pissed off about was that I was chasing a 15-minute high.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time angry at myself, the things I did, the things I didn't even remember doing, and at alcohol.
I'm so happy you brought up the being angry at alcohol. I villainized alcohol majorly. It was one of my ways to get through things, like really looking at it as the enemy. I still do that every now and then. I don't think it's nearly, I watch other people when they quit and they're so in that, like, I'm so angry that this is marketed, that this is so in our face. And like, while I'm still angry about that, I've definitely accepted it more, which is another step that we'll get to. But oh my gosh, I was so angry at the fact that it is just marketed to us in this way that makes us think it's fun. We're never, like, we're told to drink responsibly. We're never told to not drink. It's just all backwards. And there's a lot of, I can go on and on about this, but it is the whole, we're told that so many drugs are bad, but then we're told to drink responsibly. It's like, but here's this one drug. And since it's legal and taxed, we would like you to drink it responsibly. And I felt so like, oh my God, I've been taken advantage of by the man. It was like, yeah. I was very stuck right there for a little while. I had to, yeah, of course, just, I'm always just like, why don't you just make all of them legal and just tax them all if that's what you're going to do. Oh, I could just, you guys can hear it probably.
Yeah.
I was also angry at people who, which I wouldn't have heard people if they would have talked to me about my drinking when I was drinking, but I was angry that I got blackout drunk in front of so many friends and they would just recount it to me the next day and laugh. And they never said like, hey, I think you might have a problem. Hey, I'm filling you in every weekend. I would not have heard them. I would have been so mad at them if they would have said that. But it was so accepted within my friend circle and between me and Ryan too. So it's just, there's a lot of emotions you navigate when you ditch your drinking self.
Definitely.
When you say goodbye to your drinking self. All right. The last stage is acceptance. And this is where I live in most of the time now. I've accepted it.
Me too.
I've accepted that me and alcohol are no longer besties.
Yep.
It's a good stage to live in, actually. And it doesn't take any of the other stages away. But I accept that I'm not a drinker anymore. I'm never going to be a drinker again. Drunk Sarah's gone. And that's okay.
Like, yeah,
it took a while for me to get there. And I can't tell you how long. People always want to know. Do you have a date? Like,
no. Unfortunately, there's no date that I am aware of. I do agree with you, Sarah, and I'm in a very similar place. Like, drunk Heather, c'est la vie, and
yep.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And you know, it did take a long time for me to get into acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And to just kind of and accept the fact that I had a problem. That took me a long time. And I don't know. That one's hard to communicate to people because how could I quit drinking without thinking I had a problem? But I think that's so part of me being like my black sheep mentality. I'm going to not drink to stick it to the man. I'm going to not drink because I'm going to go against societal norm. And probably about like 2 years in, I was like, hey, I'm going to not drink because I had a problem.
Right. Yeah. Oh, spite has kept me from drinking many a times in the past 3 years.
Yeah. And I think whatever works for you is amazing. Use those tools because there's no amount of alcohol that's good for you. And when they say drink one glass of red wine a day, no, don't. That research is backed by big alcohol if you dig far enough. So you don't need to believe that. You can go check out any JAMA research and they're going to stick to, alcohol is not really good for you. You can just stay away from it. It adds no value to your life, health-wise, mentally-wise, emotionally-wise. So I did write in my notes that I said that I think I started living in the stage of acceptance like after 6 months, kind of after I crossed that anger bridge. but I definitely bounced for a while. And and still every now and then I have to tell myself that I won't drink until I'm 80, just to give my brain that out. So remember that you're going to bounce from stage to stage. There's no getting through each stage and being done with it. Like, oh, woof, I got through denial.
Check.
Check. On to anger now. Let's put that in the calendar. You don't get to do that. And it really is just like processing the grief of losing a loved one. And don't feel bad that you are missing a part of you that you know wasn't healthy. Have you found that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
And were you expecting to miss your drinking self the way you did?
No, absolutely not. It's something that I hadn't, and I like dove into Quitlet and podcasts and Staymakers and another support community. And I just didn't read it or don't remember it. But no, I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, didn't really even hear it. I've heard it now more from other sober content creators, but it's definitely not a topic people touch on a lot. I think it's because you just don't get it until you're totally in it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, but it is nice to hear people go, oh, good. She hit that stage too, because I do think a lot of times people are like, they make it look so easy.
Yeah, it's but, not.
Yeah. It's always work, but it's work that's worth doing and it's work that makes me feel good. So
yeah. I think it may be easier for folks who are in community like the Daymakers and folks who I work with one-on-one. I think personally and professionally, the last place that I or anyone like me needs to be is our heads.
Mm-hmm.
So that if we can talk this out, write it out, tell these stories in safe places, I do think it makes it easier.
Yeah, I totally agree. So if you are kind of, if you're on the journey and it's just not clicking, and then you've listened to this, like, yes, I've had all those feelings. I wish I had somebody I could talk to. Check out Coaching with Heather. Check out the Daymakers community. Go online and look up all the different options. There's so many options out there where you can surround yourself with other people who are on the journey so you feel less alone.
Yeah. Check out the show notes. We'd love to hear from you. Make sure to leave us a rating, subscribe, leave us a review. It takes like 30 seconds. Helps us stay more visible to help others.
Mm-hmm.
And we would really appreciate that. So,
yeah. And if you haven't already, go follow Heather and I on social media. If you can't get enough of us between the 1 week break of the podcast each week, I'm on social media posting reels and TikToks almost every day. And Heather's there too. So both of our links to our accounts are always in the show notes as well. So go check those out.
Yeah. Until next week. Bye, y'all.